This is Lord James Douglas, a.k.a. Paul Willis, who we've spoken to before. Now, Paul, there's a whole range of people today in their various periods. What are we covering?
Well, just over on our right, we can see we have a High German knight, a Saxon lord, and a few of their squires. We also have scattered in there a few Romans, a German Landschneck, and a mixture of other types that we haven't worked out yet.
How do you tell them apart? Because obviously you know your period very well. How do you tell them apart?
I'm looking at the armour. I can tell with Duke Sir Cornelius over here, his armour's really pretty and fluted and looks really nice. That's very German. Sir Sheridan over there, who's wearing what just looks like a tea tunic, a large tea tunic, and underneath that is his armour, which looks like Saxon.
So the armour is underneath the tunic instead of over the top of the tunic. Okay.
Yep. And the idea being so that he looks the same in court as he does on the battlefield, and you're just not sure whether he's been inspected and he should be there until he puts his hood down and throws his helmet on and away you go.
There's such a variety. Mm-hmm. You've got different people able to do different things. You've got a range of different styles of fighting as well. What do we see?
We have sword and shield, which are all heavy fighters train with initially, and that's what you basically authorise on. From that, you then go up to two-handed swords, glaives, which are a longer weapon, and we even have a 12-foot fibreglass pike on the field today. It's the equivalent of long-distance bombing in this kind of warfare. Plus, we have archers on the field as well.
My name's Asmund Braswold. Most of this armour is actually not mine. It's made by a fellow SCA member called Joachim. Joachim is also a marshal here. But yeah, basically, it's comprised of, a lot of it resembles his house flags, which you can see. We've got a ace of spades, I think, behind there. Or
spades and clubs.
Yeah. And the flanges of that are covering your shoulder blades.
Yep. We've got general crusader-style armour. Leg plates, again, with the key features on the sides, and, yeah, covers most of it.
Now, there's a lot of leather and buckling involved to get it all on you. Just how hot is it inside there?
Whatever the temperature is outside, it's generally double it, if not more. So, just walking around at the moment, it's about double the outside temperature. And then once you get into battle, you do sweat quite a lot because it's even more so hot in there. You get I've been in armour that's, reached 60 degrees.
Now, there's a lot of flexibility, but it really does fit you quite snugly. You've got it buckled tight around your arms, tight around your legs, around your waist, but you've also got it around your neck.
Yeah, no. As much as this looks like it's a snug fit, it's really not. It looks like I can manoeuvre it really well, and surprisingly I can for this set of armour, but most of the time you feel very restricted in it. It's basically, you've got that neck piece there because, well, you don't want your neck to get hit, do you?
Now, it was a bit of a struggle for you to get the helmet off. How come it's so snug?
Well, basically, SCA, it's about safety first. So it's really, to have that helmet there, it needs to be a fit that doesn't in any way get the front of my face or slip off, because you'll see that they do quite hard hits, both up, down, and then to the sides and all around. So you want to make sure that that's on there tight so it doesn't move while you're in battle.
Now, how much fun is it? I know you get the hits are real. It's not pretend. How much fun is it?
Oh, it's a fair amount of fun. I travelled 6 hours just to do this one. I got here at 5:30 this morning. It's a lot of fun. It's great to watch. It, a lot of people associate it with the movie role plays or whatnot. But the fact that it is real, the fact that you would go out there, like, I've got no padding on here at the moment, so if I get hit on the chest, I know it's going to hurt. It's more about that whole thrill and adrenaline type pump action that you just can't do normally. Like, you've got arrows flying at you, you've got swords, you've got glaives, you've got big scary men running at you, and people that could, take one shot and knock you unconscious. So it's in a sense a fun sport, but you know that it's a controlled atmosphere, so you know that you're not going to get that seriously hurt.
Gwyn Forkhood.
Now, you've just been in a fairly spectacular battle. From a spectator's point of view, what actually happened there? What was going on?
What we're doing is we're reenacting combat on the field, as in this case a small skirmish, say, between two forces of about 20 to 30 people, which would have taken place sometime between the 13th and 15th centuries. What happens is that we have two sides. We have an objective. In this case, the objective is to get to the other end intact. We have archers and heavy infantry who fight each other. If you're struck with a blow that you think was hard enough, that if you'd been wearing real armour, you would have been injured, then you leave the field, you're slain, you're dead, and the side which has got individuals still standing is victorious.
Now, you are absolutely puffing and sweating. How hard is it to do it out there?
It's not actually very hard. Most of this is because I'm wearing several layers of clothing, including quilted cloth underneath and a closed helm. So it's not actually physically that demanding once you get used to it. I wear, when I'm fighting in single combat, I wear 34 kilograms of armour. I weigh 68 kilograms, so I wear half my body weight of armour. And I have fought 100 bouts in a row and still being able to keep going. So you build up fitness.
And why do you love doing this?
I was brought up in a household with historians as parents, and they made the mistake of making me read historical novels and fantasy when I was little and never looked back, and I've been doing this for 25 years, quarter of a century of getting out here and doing this, so there must be something in it, either that or I just can't see sense after a quarter of a century.
Now, of course, we're here in the 21st century and there are certain rules that apply for safety and things like that. Yes. How close to the authentic do you get?
We try to get as close as possible, obviously, with the safety concern. We don't use steel weapons, we use rattan weapons, which was done in the Middle Ages for tournaments of training. They used whalebone and wood as weapons. The idea is to get as authentic as possible and stay safe. We'll use modern padding rather than quilted horsehair or something like that because it's much better. In a lot of cases, we'll use modern materials because they're more consistent. They're less likely to break under the stresses of battle. Armour for us is an investment. For a person in the Middle Ages, if a piece of armour broke, it's there to save your life. It's done its job. You throw it away and you get a new one. We don't want to do that. We like to make it last for a while. So the legs I'm wearing are based on late 14th century Italian, as are the elbows. The gorget is based on a 14th century Austrian piece. So we model it off original pieces wherever possible.
Now, you have your tunic over the top of your armour, while some people have their armour over the top of their tunic. Who does what and why?
This is called a tabard. It serves two purposes. Number one, if I'm in hot sun, this keeps the sun off the metal bits, which keeps me cooler. Number two, it's got my heraldic device on it, my coat of arms, and that way this is registered to me. I'm the only person in the group worldwide who can wear this, so everybody knows who I am, which means that when we're fighting a war like this, as you'll see, quite a lot of us have very narrow eye slots. It's hard to see your opponents. You can't see their faces. You need some other way of recognising them. I don't mind dying to the enemy. I hate dying to my friends.
Friendly fire.
Yeah, I don't like that. It's not fun.
Now, you mentioned that worldwide. Now, this, whilst we're here in the Riverina region this weekend, yep, this is across Australia and international. Yes. So people are involved in this everywhere.
Everywhere. Absolutely. This is a group called the Shire of Borders Cross, and it's part of what we call the Kingdom of Lockark, which is part of, that's all of Australia and New Zealand. Groups in every major centre. There are three groups in Melbourne, for example. That's how big it is. About 1,000 people are financial members in Australia and New Zealand, over 40,000 worldwide, with groups on every continent. And when I say every continent, including Antarctica, we've got a group of people at one of the research bases down there who are involved, and they have fighter trainings and dance practices in the storage sheds where it's a balmy 10 degrees Celsius. We've got members in Iceland, Romania, Estonia, US, Canada, South Africa, Israel, Korea, Japan, all over the world, every continent. 40,000 financial members, participant rates probably up around the 80 to 90,000 range.
And I suppose a message to those in Antarctica, if you leave your armour out overnight, don't lick it.
No, don't lick your armour, and sleep with your box in your sleeping bag, don't put it on cold. I've seen that happen. Oh! Oh! Oh!